Hello and welcome back to the Post-Production Club podcast. My name is Luke.
And I'm Gavin. Today we talk with Melinda Zahner-Guerra. She's an Emmy Award-winning editor for her work on HBO's A Black Lady Sketch Show. She's also worked on American Horror Stories and unscripted content like Naked and Afraid, which we talk about, what it's like editing that many naked bodies. We talk about the role of stubbornness and perfectionism as a creator, moving to LA, the ability to adapt in the film industry, and secrets of editing for comedy versus other genres. I even have an embarrassing secret that I finally get off my chest towards the end of the episode. So here we go. Okay, we have Melinda Zahner-Guerra here today. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to get to chat with you.
Where does this podcast find you?
It finds me in the LA, in the beautiful Sherman Oaks. I don't know if anybody watched that pandemic movie, The Bubble, with Keegan-Michael Key and Pedro Pascal. But at the girl keeps thinking Pedro is a movie star and he lives in Beverly Hills. And she's going to go live with in Beverly Hills with him. And at the end, he goes, I live in Sherman Oaks, and I just died. So whenever I say I live in Sherman Oaks, I am channeling Pedro Pascal.
Nice. Is that the is that the movie that put Sherman Oaks on the map?
I don't know. Probably not. I mean, we're definitely the Valley. We're the Valley here. So
I've been to Sherman Oaks.
Clueless may have put us on the map, really.
I've been to Sherman Oaks. I love it. It's awesome there.
It is. It is. I love it over here. Better parking.
I got a killer churro from Sherman Oaks.
Yes. When we do churros well in Southern California, for sure.
Did you grow up there?
No, I grew up in Northern Virginia, right outside D.C., and then moved out here after college. So I've been here a while to be in the entertainment industry. But yeah, so I've been here longer than I was there. So now I think I'm a native.
Wow. That is incredible. What was it like making that switch?
You know, it was when you're, 21, and you're just like, yeah, this is what I'm doing. No problem. No fear. I think now it's far scarier to think you're like, just come out here. I luckily was able to move out here with my college roommate. So it's like we had each other, one person to live like that we knew. And then go out there and made friends and found apartments, and it's kind of crazy. Yeah. And then you look back and you're like, damn, were we young and dumb, or just really lucky, or really brave? All of the above. But yeah.
Why now? Why is it more scary to move out there now?
Because I don't think it's scary. It's just scary as a, after like looking back at it, like not that scary to move to LA, but just, when you're coming out of college and you're so young, you definitely think like you know everything and can totally take on the world. And after you've lived in the world a little bit longer, you're like, wow, I did that. Like, I just was like, yeah, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to try and get in the TV business. And I know nothing about it, really. And I think, it's one of those things where you just... You don't realize what the world can be or how scary it can be or the challenges that you will face. And then looking back, you can see like, oh man, I did that. That was crazy. But, here I am. So it all worked out. But yeah, I think it's just, it's youth. You know what I mean? Like if you could look back and know what you knew now, would you do things differently? I mean, yeah, that's very Benjamin Button. Philosophical way to start.
That was honestly going to be my next question, or maybe the better question is, to people that are thinking about moving out to LA now, what advice would you give?
It's tough right now, like, to be honest, and I don't want to be negative Nancy, but it is the industry is definitely going through a weird time. We're still finding our feet after I don't want to say the pandemic, but after, everything shut down for that, there was like an explosion of work. And then last year after the strikes, and we had like the Warner Brothers Discovery merger and lots of unscripted stuff getting canceled, and then the pause in production with scripted stuff. And we still haven't recovered from that. We're looking at, IATSE and the Teamsters, we're negotiating our contracts right now. So we're still in a little bit of like a pause, and it's tough. It's tough for people who've been here a long time. It's tough, even tougher for new people trying to break in, especially also because we're still in like a work from home situation, which when you're new, you don't get that interaction with people like in the office and really getting to meet you, and you can't just pop into your editor's bay and sit with them or chat. You know, it's a whole thing if you're only seeing people over Zoom a little bit. So it's tough. I think you have to be realistic with maybe the speed of which things will move, and kind of have patience. And, you know, right now also while things are a little slow, if you can put off that move, and if there's ways for you to be getting experience and credits in another city like New York or Chicago, or, you know, Atlanta has a bunch of stuff, or you're working on smaller film shoots or commercial productions, that sort of thing where you are and can be saving money and doing all of that, like that might be a really good idea until you start to hear that, like, yeah, things are picking back up. Things are picking back up. Because I think it would be really tough to move out here right now and just find that like every door is kind of closed, but just because it's not just close to you, it's close to everybody. You know, we're in this like pause, and it is a pause, but we don't know how long that pause is going to be. So, you know, we were hearing spring and now we're hearing 2025. So just, you know, be patient and be realistic with what's going on just in general in the industry in a bigger way. And anything you can do in the meantime, do that too. You know what I mean? If it's like shooting your own stuff, student films, corporate stuff, if that's really, really, really what you want to do, you might not be doing the exact thing right now. It will come back, and then, you know, you'll be prepared for when that does. So that's kind of my, like, it's not all sunshine and roses, but we'll get there. We'll get there.
If there's anything that the last 5 years have taught me, it's that change is the normal thing. And I think there's been so many things in the last 5 years for filmmakers that have just caused so much chaos and uprootedness. And I think it's really easy to be the victim there and go, oh, like, of course, either I would make this jump from a full-time thing to freelance right when the pandemic would hit. Oh, of course, you know, I would move out to LA right when the strikes would happen, and woe is me. And I don't want to belittle any hardship that anyone's gone through, but I think, you know, even with the developments of AI and the continued just restructuring of all of the streaming companies and content and everything, I think change is the thing that we have to get really used to and be able to figure out how to adapt really, really well and really quickly. And that's why I honestly really love talking to people like you, people who that have the experience and have adapted through many other changes in the past, to get to hear a little bit, you know, glean a little bit of wisdom. So, I mean, diving in, I would love to hear a little bit more about your process. You've worked on a diverse range of content, from American Horror Stories to comedy shows like A Black Lady Sketch Show. And a lot of time editors, pretty much, you know, everyone in the film industry, they get pegged into one genre when we're creating. So you only get hired for stuff based on what your last gig was, right? So what advice would you give to those wanting to break out, make the leap, and not be really pigeonholed into one genre?
I mean, it's tough. It's definitely tough. But I think one thing that I did a lot of when I was I've recently made the move from kind of the unscripted doc world into scripted. So I have, you know, 15 years of experience in unscripted. And one thing I really did a lot of when I was coming up in that editorial world was making sure I wasn't just doing the same thing all the time, kind of also for like my own sanity. You know, it's very easy and can get very comfortable, which is nice, to just be like, oh, I'm on this show and it comes back every season and I know it. But things can start to feel a little stale. You can get a little grumpy. So I kind of was always trying to, like, if I was on like a docu-follow kind of thing for a minute, can I get into a competition show? Can I do, you know, I would go back to like paranormal adventure, you know, survival shows, then back to that docu-follow where you're looking at like pretty people, and just kind of try to keep myself doing a bunch of different genres, or, you know, cut a short that was like a horror or like an indie thing that was, you know, I did some indie web series that were really comedy. I've done like an animated thing with some friends as their editor, and just to kind of get as much experience as I can so that I can always, when you're interested then in like another kind of project, even if you haven't specifically done that thing, you can say, well, yes, I haven't done, you know, horror or whatever, but I have done, you know, when I was talking with American Horror Stories, you know, I just come off Black Lady Sketch Show, which is comedy. We did have some horror sketches that were still funny, but also, you know, I was like, I haven't done like horror, but I've cut this like indie suspense thriller, show. I've cut, paranormal ghost shows. So, you know, I know how to make a jump scare. I know how to do the, like, the suspense and stuff. So it might not be exactly the same thing, but I do have experience that translates. And I think that helps when you're then trying to, like, go back and forth and keep yourself fresh, that you can make those connections and pitch yourself in that way. Like, I might not have done this exact kind of drama, but, you know, like if I was talking to Shonda, I'd be like, I haven't done Bridgerton, but I did do a Bridgerton sketch on a Black Lady Sketch Show. So I get what you're doing. You know what I mean? Like, we had a sketch that was inspired by this or whatever. So I think however you can pitch yourself, and if it's something that you're really interested in too, like make sure that it really excites you to do something different. Because if you know you love comedy, like I'll talk to some people and they're like, I love comedy. I've always wanted to do comedy. Comedy is what I want to do. And it's like, that's amazing. But I feel like even when I was like coming up in the entertainment industry, I came out here to be an actor. So I think you also get in that way. You don't want to be pigeonholed, right? You can do anything. You can be, I can play Macbeth. I can be, you know, do this and do that. So I think that has also always been part of my like thought process on picking projects, like what's new and different and what can kind of, where can I learn different things that I haven't learned yet too. So as long as you're always open to like learning, I think, but sometimes you really have to force it too. You have to be like, no, I know I can do this. No, I know I can do this. And like go after those things for a bit. It may take a while. Like it's not like an easy sell sometimes, but eventually you'll knock on the right door and they'll be like, yeah, I think you can. And they'll bring you in. So.
Yeah, and what's the worst they could say, right? No.
Yeah, no. And you're like, great, I already wasn't working on your show, so you told me no, and I'm going to move on to the next one. You just have to be like, well, that's your loss. Okay, fine. And keep going. You know, you do have to emotionally pull yourself up by your bootstraps a lot as you go through things. And there are no's. There are a lot of no's in this business sometimes. But then you get yeses, and those yeses are really exciting, feel really good, and yeah, and can sustain you for a while, which is nice.
When you talk about pitching yourself, is there something unique about you or your process when it comes to editing that stands out compared to others?
You know, I think for me, coming from an actor initially, for me, my thing is very much about performance, like finding those performances that serve the story and tell the story. And also like, what are those subtleties and subtexts that you get in with actors that can add a whole nother layer. So like, you know, my initial wanting to be an actor even was, I love storytelling. Like I'm a big reader. I, you know, when I was a kid, I would get 10 books at the library every summer, every week, and just like plow through them. And so like, but I'm not a writer. So this was how I could be a storyteller. And you know, at first when you're younger, you only know like actor, director, those are the jobs. And eventually I learned, oh wait, there's so many other jobs. And like editing, you get to be a little bit of a writer, you get to be a little bit in charge of performances and digging into those characters without having to be the one to put yourself on screen and be in vulnerable situations. But you can make it paint with the other people who do it so much better, some emotions. And I think that for me, that's kind of how I like to really sell myself, that like, I'm here to help you tell your story. And I'm also here to really make sure that your actors and your direction is coming through in those choices that we're putting up there, because you know, there's so much subtlety. There's different ways of, like, you know, a look or a not look can add a different layer or tell a different story, and that might not be what we're into. So that's for me, that's, I think, what kind of gives me a special outlook on editing and how I dig into the footage. You know, I really feel like I'm putting those characters on a little bit.
You won an Emmy for your work on A Black Lady Sketch Show.
I did.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
How does that feel?
It's wild. It feels wild. It was amazing. It was super cool. You know, it's one of those things you dream of when you're getting into the business, and to really have it happen. Like, I still think I feel like I'm processing it on some levels. You're like, no, that really happened. And it was super fun. And it's also like, because with sketch, then the way we cut the show, we had three editors and we cut each of the sketches. And then at the end, after all the sketches are cut, we put the shows together. So there were three of us, the team was nominated together. So it was really also an amazing thing to get to be up on that stage with your friends and your co-editors. And we even got to bring Robin Thede up with us, who was in the audience and kind of like bum rushed us when we were walking up to the stage. So we got to have her up there to celebrate with us. And it's because Post is a team. Like, even if there is one editor up there who's getting the statue, you can't do it without your assists and your post producers and everybody who, you know, your music supervisors and the composers. Like, it's a team. This whole business is a team thing. And it was really amazing to get to do that as a team and be up there. And yeah, but I still, it's like someone asked me the other day if my actor self would believe that I had won an Emmy, but as an editor. And I, you know, I said, probably not. But, you know, it's one of those things when you like kind of set out to have a goal, the path is very windy. Nothing is ever straight, but it's like, you still hit that goal. It's just like the job title is a little different, but yeah, it's cool.
Just like any good story.
Yeah.
Unexpected twists and turns. So for editing for comedy, how does that differ from other genres? And what tips do you have for editing for comedy specifically?
You know, it's all about pace and with comedy and landing the joke. And, you know, Robin has a very, very particular, like, razor sharp pace that she loves. So I would always say, like, you know, there were so many times I did taking out the air between like the punch and the joke and the landing, the joke and the reaction. Cause she, you know, zippy, zippy, zippy. Then you have to take that second to let the joke land. So I think pace is the big thing with comedy, and it's fast and it's tight. Whereas in drama, you're going to let things breathe and you're going to let somebody have their look. But in comedy, you have to find a way to have like the joke and then the reaction real fast, tight together, but then you're moving on to the next joke. So it's a real balance about like how exactly much to the frame do we need to let that joke land before we're moving on and not letting anything fall. So pace is the big thing in comedy, where in drama, there's a little bit more room to like sink into those moments and reactions. But in comedy, you just gotta, like, you're running a marathon or a sprint, and, you know, marathon is your drama a bit more.
You seem like a pretty funny person. Did you have to do any research in, you know, getting ready for editing comedy, or did you just rely upon your own instincts and how to cut?
Well, I had done a lot of research back in the day when I was in my acting days. I did a lot of improv comedy with, like, Improv Olympic, RIP, they're gone, or, you know, like UCB. So I had done a lot of comedy training. And so that definitely helps, because I had already gone through the process of, like, telling a joke on stage, letting it land, or being the one who had the reaction, how long do you let the audience laugh, that sort of thing. So I think that definitely helped, kind of already have that ingrained. And, you know, I think it's always a good thing for editors to do, or even directors, like, take an acting class, or if you're working in comedy, like an improv class, because that also gives you, like, the actor speak, or the better ways to communicate your direction or notes to the actors, and then you're really all on the same page. And then you also kind of really appreciate what they're going through when they're up there and having to, like, be funny and be on or be crying, all of that. So it's like, it's always good to take those classes, even if it's not, like, gonna be your job, but it helps you with everybody else. So yeah, I had a lot of research, but it was years ago.
I mean, that feels incredibly important, and a big reason as to why it was so successful is coming from someone who gets it.
Yeah. Yeah. And comedy can be, I feel like, what it's like, you know, people who are really great musicians are really great musicians. And I think you kind of have that naturally. And I think there is a level with comedy where it can be taught the way to cut and the way to pace and all that. But on some level, it is just, you know, if somebody's inherently funny, like, when you're around a friend or somebody who always has that, like, funny thing to say, or that deadbeat thing, that, you know, deadpan reaction, that you're like, I couldn't think of that. I couldn't do that on my own. So it's like, and, you know, with Black Lady Sketch Show, the, like, Robin, Gab, Sky, like, they are so incredibly, incredibly talented that, I mean, it's hard to go wrong. They don't misstep. You had too many options. So when you're working with people who are that funny, you know, that only makes your job easier. But then, yeah, how do you in turn highlight them even more, which is hard. But yeah, I think that helps to have that training.
Yeah, for sure. What is something that stands out as far as, like, advice or something that you learned while working on a Black Lady Sketch Show from either any one of the directors, from creators, actors?
I mean, from Robin, just pace, pace, pace. Faster, faster, faster. Yeah, she loves pacing, and then also layering. Like, where can you layer things underneath? If someone has a little comment or sound or additional things that maybe aren't in the script or off camera, can you layer more things in so that when you're going back and somebody's rewatching, they're like, oh, I didn't hear that. Like, sometimes I feel like in one of the early Coral Reefs sketches from maybe season one, when they first introduced them, you hear, like, Issa off camera saying something really funny under Gab as she's talking about, like, their 401ks or whatever it was. So those little things. And I think Taylor Mason was just, like, so pro at putting those things in. She was like a ninja with, like, subtle dialogue that even we wouldn't notice. So yeah, I think that was one of the, where can you sprinkle some things in that aren't meant necessarily to be heard in the first viewing, but makes it, people, when they watch again, they'll be like, oh, what else have I missed? You know, and then you're coming back. So how can you layer things in to make people come back?
That's so sneaky.
Yeah, it is. It is. And when you start to pick up on it, you're like, I think we were at a mix once and I was like, did she just say that? And, you know, I was like, has that been in the whole all season? And, you know, Steph would be like, yeah, it was in the whole season. I'm like, I just noticed it because we're in a big room and hearing it in a different way. And I was like, oh, that's hilarious. I didn't hear that. I didn't hear. So yeah, it's great.
Do you have any favorite ones that we should go like try and find? Any hidden ones?
Oh, man.
You snuck in that you're like, this is so funny.
Oh God, I probably do, but now I can't think of them off the top of my head. But I think we put a lot of in Taylor cut the baptism runs on Duncan, which was our like basketball church thing. It was very funny. Put in a lot of like sneaker squeaks because, you know, they're supposed to be playing basketball. And then sneaker squeaks kind of started to sneak their way in to other scenes in weird places all season. So I guess season four, if you can find the hidden sneaker squeaks, that was kind of our fun little thing. Like, where can you put a sneaker squeak in where it's like she's wearing heels, but we stuck in a squeak. So, yeah.
I think sound design is one of the funniest ways to inject comedy into into the piece. You know, I remember a scene in a comedy where the friend is pushing the other friend into like the van, just as like a, you know, like a, hey, get away from me, like funny gesture. And you see that and you hear the sound of him hitting the van, but then they cut to the other character and who's having a serious conversation, and you hear another person get shoved into the van again. Like they're still fighting like off screen while a serious conversation is trying to happen.
Yeah.
It's like these, you know, and I just love, I die at that like every single time. Okay, what is something surprising or unexpected, but you feel like it's vitally important that people should know about editors?
Ooh, I mean, we are introverts a lot of time. Like we do like to be, we're good on our own. We like to be in our room by ourselves a little bit. Again, I'm going to give props to Taylor Mason. She calls us the indoor kids. Which we are, and sometimes we get to get out of our boxes and we have a lot of fun. We can be fun. But I think one thing that people maybe don't realize about editors, it's like, especially when you're working, it's like like I said before, sometimes it's a team and we are there to collaborate. And I know sometimes this business can pit you against each other, even within like when you're on a show, or you're, you know, like the studio versus the director versus the showrunners, like things, opinions can all get very, everyone has their opinion and wants to get that across. And I think one thing people maybe don't realize about the job of editing is there is a little bit of like, therapy, or also like UN delegate, you know, you really have to like balance people's emotions and you know, this is somebody's vision. They've been working on it a very long time, but then there's also have a lot of money behind it. So like emotions and feelings can all be very high. And you do have to kind of be a little bit of, even if you are like an introvert and this is uncomfortable, but you have to find a way to kind of manage all those emotions and feelings and keep everybody and even and heard and do your best to make those things happen. So, you know, a psychology 101 class might be a really good idea in college to kind of learn how to deal with different personality types, which is, can be a little bit like in the same way I feel like probably like hairdressers don't realize that they're half their job is therapy because like people get in their chair and just like bitch and moan. Yeah, sometimes a lot of our job is making sure people feel heard and soothing emotions and keeping everybody balanced and on the same track. Because at the end of the day, we're all here to serve the story and the project and make the best thing we can. But it can be a balancing act.
It sounds like good editors are middle children.
I probably. I mean, I'm the oldest.
I am a middle child, so I'm just, you know, tooting my own horn, but, Yeah, you're totally right. That ability to hold like a lot of opinions, the good of the piece, how much time is left, but it is a lot to hold, and that's a skill anyone can learn, and I think is vitally important. So that's really good to call out. Okay, I've got some rapid fire questions for you. If you could edit something on any subject, what would it be and why?
Something. I come from also from like a dance background, so you know, if they were doing like a Black Swan 2, I would be into that kind of thing, like some sort of drama ballet or you know, bands. I really loved the Daisy Jones and the Six, like that was great. So that would be something I'd be into, like something with the music background, but not necessarily a musical.
Yeah, well, I like too that you went Black Swan, like real dark. I think we get Portman back, Aronofsky, if you're listening. Mm-hmm. I think the world is demanding a Black Swan too.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, one that I love to hear from all of our guests. What are some of your favorite movies? I know it's hard to pick one, so you can list a couple.
Okay. Definitely A Princess Bride, I think, is when I was a kid, I've seen the most. Like when I discovered that, I think I watched it like 10 times in one weekend. That and A Christmas Story are probably honestly my two favorite movies that I can't like, could not live without. I have to watch them like once a year, obviously Christmas Story at Christmas. What are some other, those are my two favorites. I think those are my big ones. I'm sure there's a drama in there somewhere, but those are always my go-tos.
You know, Melinda, I have held on to a secret for most of my life, and I will now air it on this podcast that I have never seen A Princess Bride.
Loser. Loser.
Yeah, no, you have to. Like, I literally, my husband, before we got married, had not seen Princess Bride or A Christmas Story, and I was like, well, those are deal breakers. If we're getting married, we're sitting down and watching these things. So that when I quote them, you know the movies that I'm quoting, because, you know, I had some old roommates who could quote any movie. So I feel like guys are really good at, like, they have movie quotes for everything. And I have two movies that I quote, and those are the two movies. So you must know my reference. I think they're good. You would enjoy them. And I mean, Mandy Patinkin as this, Christopher Guest is the six-fingered man. Like when I then saw like Waiting for Guffman, and I was like, Christopher Guest, that's a six-fingered, you know what I mean? And it's yeah, when you, how great these actors have become, but like this kind of like early 80s comedy movie that I feel like was just like a little bit of a sleeper. Robin Wright, come on. Yeah, no, you gotta watch it. I think it holds up.
I want to be able to understand all of these references and these people that you're talking about, but I cannot, because I haven't seen it.
You have to.
Who's that even directed by? I am so embarrassed to be talking about this right now.
Rob Reiner? Well, now I'm going to look down because I don't know. I think it's Rob Reiner.
Yeah, you guys all giving me crap. Didn't know you were entering into movie trivia, did you?
I don't pay attention to all the credits.
It is Rob Reiner.
Yes, I was right.
Oh, you got it right.
He's also the dad in it, apparently. I didn't know that. So the guy reading the book is the director.
Totally, yeah. I didn't know that.
Oh, reading the book, yes. But then Columbo is the grandfather who's actually reading, like, is reading to Fred Savage. What is Columbo's name? Yeah, like, grandpa comes over to read the book because he's sick, and it's Columbo. So, yeah, there's... It's great.
Totally. Yeah, cool. I know exactly what you guys are talking about.
I expect a book report on this by the end of the weekend.
Done.
Should be hosting a video podcast, and I haven't seen The Princess Bride yet.
Yep, you know what? This is it, guys. My final show. Thanks for having me.
Fired.
I'm taking over.
Play the walk-off music now.
Yep.
So, Melinda, if you had to boil it down to one thing, what would you attribute... to getting where you are now and accomplishing the things you have?
Oh, interesting. I mean, one word, probably stubbornness in a way, in a good way. I think just kind of You have to have a bit of like tenacity and ability to hold on when it just seems like you're not getting anywhere, or things aren't going the way you want, or it feels like it's slow, or you're taking a step back. And just kind of, you got to be like clear about your goals and clear about what you want. And also good, there's an aspect of having to like really evaluate and be like, is this serving me? You know, things feel hard and things feel tough. Is it because it's wrong and I'm forcing, like, no, I'm going to do this because I said I was going to do it? Or is it just things are hard and tough and I'm getting tired, but I need to just like keep putting one foot in front of the other and hang on? And you have, yeah, there's a stubbornness into knowing like, nope, this is still what I want. Still, like, even if it's rough, I'm going to keep going. But then you also kind of have to figure out like what isn't serving you anymore. I think that was something I learned when I was making that transition from like, I don't think this acting thing is serving me, but I still want to be in this space. So what else can I be doing? You know, and like really taking a look at that and being like, yeah, I have to put that down, but how do I keep moving forward in this space? So I think that little bit of stubbornness is what you have to have. And a little bit of realism too, right? Like, is this realistic? So, yeah.
It's such a tricky thing to balance. You, on one hand, want to have that perfectionistic nature of being able to go, this is not there yet, and I'm going to make this perfect. You hear that about so many creators, famous directors and editors, and a lot of people we talk about their ability to just really lean into something. At the same time, you do want to not let perfect get in the way of good, you know, of complete, and that good enough to move on is really helpful in some instance. But I think when it comes to storytelling and art, you know, I don't know if there's much of a place for good enough. You really do got to stand out. And so that's really cool to hear your ability to, I like that stubbornness of not letting it be good enough and pushing through.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you look ahead to the future, what's kind of the dream for you? What would be the vision? Where would you want to end up?
Ooh, you know, I think I'm still, as I'm kind of traveling this new path in scripted, I have those same feelings that I kind of did when I was coming up in unscripted. Like, I don't, like we were talking at the beginning, I don't want to be pigeonholed. So like, what's next? I do want to do features. Like, I love television. I love, especially we are in kind of now, I hate saying like the golden age of television. Some people are like, that's coming to an end. But, you know, the projects that are out there are so good. You know, we're developing book series in really great ways that aren't just getting, you know, that deserve more than 2 hours on screen. You're giving them 6-8 episodes. So I love that. But I'm also like, you know, I do want to do, you know, who's the next Greta Gerwig? Like, I want to work with her on that sort of cool stuff, like do some features, do some different genres. So I think, you know, one thing that scares me is a lot of VFX stuff. But so I'm like, well, maybe I need to look at, you know, Mandalorian is only going to have one more movie. But, you know, what's going on in Star Wars, like with the volume is freaky and scary, but maybe I want to get into some sci-fi, something heavy VFX, some action. You know, you look at those new Mad Maxes, Furiosa has been fantastic. And I love that, you know, George Miller's wife is cutting them for him and, you know, giving that like kind of female perspective. So I think it's just keeping all the doors open and not getting pigeonholed. So I don't know what the future looks like. I hope it looks like a lot of different things.
Well, shameless plug, if you're interested in learning more about VFX, we've got a couple episodes of past guests that you can go listen to.
I definitely do.
And you know two VFX nerds now.
Yes.
One VFX. Yeah. One willing to
say. I know. I'm like, green screen. Phone comms. Oh, my God. Like, tracking blurs. I was working on Naked and Afraid. People always ask, like, do you do all those blurs? And I'm like, no. There's a whole department of very talented rotoscope artists who do those blurs. Like, I Don't come anywhere near that. That is well beyond my pay grade.
Wait, that's fascinating. I didn't realize that. I thought it would have been just, yeah, the editorial team, probably the like assistant to the assistant editor you would think would give that job. But that's really fascinating. Talk more about that.
We have. So it's, you know, in an hour of television, it's probably over 300 shots that have to be blurred. When you get into some of these bigger, like our competition shows, like Last One Standing or Naked and Afraid XL, where there's more cast than just two people, you know, you can have six naked bodies. We lock the show unblurred, and then that goes to our graphic VFX department, and they rotoscope and blur everything. So it's like, it's a big process, and God bless them. They work magic, and they're very quickly, you know, sometimes in like short amount of time when we're up against air. So yeah, they're magicians, and I wouldn't even know where to begin. Like, I can barely do a mat sometimes on Premiere. Like, I'm trying to.
I never really thought about the fact that you have to edit all that footage before it gets blurred.
We do. We see a lot. We sign NDAs. My husband has signed an NDA as well, in case he walks into my office and sees him as well. Yeah, but you don't notice it. And it's really low resolution. So it's kind of blurry already. But yeah, after about the first 5 minutes, you're like, they're naked.
Well, Melinda, thank you so much for being willing to come on today and just share all of this knowledge. You dropped some serious wisdom bombs on us, and I appreciate that. We're really trying to help shine a light on people in post. I don't think we really get to hear from people in post much. I don't think they're celebrated quite as much as they should be in the process. And so the final question would just be I want to hear how listeners can keep up with your work and your future endeavors, where we can follow along.
Ooh, good question. I mean, IMDb is always going to probably be pretty updated with whatever projects I have coming up or have worked on. My Instagram, I also put a lot of, stuff when we're starting to promote, which is Malzane, M-A-L-Z-A-N-E. And, yeah, I think that's probably those are the best ways to see what's kind of coming up in the entertainment sphere. Hopefully, awesome. There'll be some Deadline articles with like, I'm going to be cutting something, but I can never tell what Deadline's going to do. But yeah, it's a big project, maybe.
The Emmys this year again as well.
Oh, thank you. I will be probably sitting this one out. Like I have submitted my American Horror Stories, but the that category limited series is very deep and very tough. So I think there will be some big heavier hitters that will be up there, but I will enjoy watching everybody have their flowers this year. It'll be good.
Yeah. And you can't win them all like every year. You got to sit this one out, you know?
Right. Yes, exactly.
Make
yeah.
it more dramatic in 2025.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then it's your comeback year, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll be on the lookout for all your future Emmy wins and those Deadline articles. Thank you so much for coming on, Melinda.
Thank you, guys. It was great talking with you.